Welcome to Grappling Real, and I'm your host, Chris Parker, and I'm truly honored to introduce this guest to you today. He's just a legend in judo, especially in America, but overall, he's been to four Olympic events and brought home two bronze medals, helped coach Kayla Harrison to two gold medals, Travis Stevens to a silver medal, runs Fuji Mat Company, Fuji Sports, runs his own judo gym. I'm so pleased and appreciative to sit down with you, Sensei, and have a conversation. And I just want to thank you. And I introduce to you, Sensei Jimmy Pedro.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
And I appreciate you doing the interview, Sensei. And my first question is, you know, just about everybody in America has heard of Martin Luther King, and he was popularized by the speech, "I Have a Dream." So if you were to give a speech like that, but it was titled, "I Have a Dream for American Judo," what would you say in that speech?
My dream would be to paint a vision of what I want judo to become in America. So, you know, and I think it is possible, but it's going to have to come with some really strong leadership and lots of support from the judo community. But my dream would be that judo would be a main sport in America. You know, I understand that it'll never be a basketball or a football, a professional sport, but I want it to be a household name. I want everybody to know what judo is and what it can do to change people's lives, number one. Number two, I want the sport to be popular so that everybody can make a living from the sport. And the only way to do that, it does have to become professional. We need professional coaching. We need professional dojos. We need professional tournaments. We need people to do judo full-time for a living, teaching, instructing, competing, training, you know, product development. It needs to become a business. And when judo can become a business, then it can be successful as a sport, because then a lot of people will come to it and see it as something that's real. Right now, if you go to a national championships and there's 200 competitors in the entire country competing for a national title, it's not that big a deal to be a national champion. But when there's, you know, 100,000 people, 200,000 or a million people trying to be national champion, then the title is meaningful. So I would like to see judo become a mainstream sport where it's popularized and people understand its values and its rules. Then also I'd like to see people be able to make a living from the sport. And when we can do that, then we're going to start having some really good athletes, really strong teams, and be able to represent ourselves internationally and be a powerhouse.
I know you said a few times in there, but why is it specifically important to bring judo back to life in America?
The sport is growing worldwide. So there's a lot of money being invested worldwide in the sport of judo, and our sport is far more organized, far more professional than it's ever been on the world, on the global stage. Countries like Russia, Japan, Mongolia, Kazakhstan, all of your European nations, they're putting big budgets and big money towards producing good athletes, and they're seeing results. And the World Tour is so organized now. There's prize money for athletes when they win. The events are all televised. There's lots of sponsored dollars going in. It's all tied back to local communities where they're reinvesting the dollars back into the infrastructure of the sport in those countries. They're giving back to youth programs and putting, you know, underprivileged kids on the mat doing judo in those countries. So it's a good community cycle going in a lot of the major nations, where marquee athletes are winning prize money. Those marquee athletes are becoming stars of their country. Those marquee athletes are then giving back and representing their country on the local level, teaching kids. The IJF is supporting all of it with dollars and funding towards school programs and changing people's lives and becoming healthier people. It's working well in other nations, but in the United States, which is the biggest media outlet for any sport, if you want to be a popular sport in the world, you need to have some viewership and you need to have some following in the United States, because that's where all of your real TV dollars come from. That's where all your real viewership comes from. Every household in America has multiple television sets, right?
Right.
Whereas in other countries, some of them don't have any. You know, so if you want to get eyeballs on your sport, you've got to put the sport and make it a popular sport in the United States. And right now it's not.
So how did some of those other countries that are, have a high level of professionalism develop that there?
Well, from early on, judo was a sport that was seen as a great form of physical fitness. In those countries, there's a minister of sport who's in charge of making sure that, you know, good sports are getting into the school systems, things that promote health and wellness and things that are safe sports for kids to do. So in a lot of those countries, judo is become a part of their school system. It's in their physical education curriculum. So kids are doing, you know, when we go to school, what do we play in school? We play basketball. We play field hockey. We play American sports. In those countries, kids also do judo. Mm-hmm. So now there's an awareness of the sport. Everybody in that country now knows judo because they've learned how to bow. They learned how to fall. They might have learned a basic throw, a basic takedown. So there's already an awareness of what that sport is. And then because it's exposed to so many millions of kids, a certain percentage of those kids are going to take the sport. They're going to show interest. Hey, I really liked getting thrown, or I really liked holding somebody down. Therefore, they go into this sport. So when it's part of the school system in the PE curriculum, then it's going to become popular.
So would it be possible to establish a minister of sports in America and or find a way to get judo involved in the sports system?
It's a little difficult. We don't have a minister of sport in the United States, and we're very fragmented. We have 50 different states with 50 different laws, and we have right. Every school system has its own, you know, superintendent of schools. It's a far more complicated system in America to get your sport introduced into the school system, and there's a lot of bureaucracy to go through. And even if it came down from the top to bottom, not every state would adopt it, not every school would adopt it. In those countries, this is what we're doing as a nation. Right. We're fixing it, and everybody's following suit. You know, that's pretty much what they've done in Abu Dhabi for jiu-jitsu, for example. You know, the Sheikh decided that jiu-jitsu was a sport that he wanted to introduce to the entire population of Abu Dhabi. So they started with a pilot program, you know, in middle schools. They introduced the sport to the kids in the middle school. They bought gis, they bought mats. They had kids start training in jiu-jitsu. And then they had the minister of sport looked at the results. The kids are getting in less trouble. Kids are losing weight. Kids are having a healthier lifestyle. You know, they did all the statistics before and after, and they said, this sport is great, not just for my kid or this group of kids, but all kids. And then they went middle school after middle school, then they went to high school, then they dropped it down to elementary school, now it's in the military. Now everybody in the nation is doing jiu-jitsu. Hmm. Mandated from the top down.
Right, right.
That type of system would be impossible to implement in the United States.
So
far too much bureaucracy.
We would potentially have to go state by state then to get it integrated into the school system.
And possibly school system by school system.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, would tournaments and integration with jiu-jitsu and wrestling be possible to get exposure for judo?
My number one idea, in order to really give judo a kickstart, if you will,
yeah.
This is a thought that I just had recently, Chris, that I can share it with you, but it's kind of my brainchild. One of the biggest obstacles for growth of judo in America is accessibility. So judo clubs are just not accessible to people. There's only a finite number of judo instructors in this nation, right? A number of black belts.
Right.
And when you're up against baseball and soccer and hockey and every other sport that kids play today, parents are going to take their kids where it's convenient. So if I can have my kid do all of those sports 5 minutes from my house in my town, then it's likely I'm going to sign my kid up for one of those sports.
Right.
The nearest dojo to my house in Methuen is my dojo in Wakefield, Mass., which is 30 minutes away. So the sport's not accessible to anybody in Methuen. People at the beginner level, people are going to drive 30 minutes, fight traffic,
right,
just to see if their kid likes something.
Right.
So, and I'm fairly close to my dojo. You know, the nearest dojo to some people might be 2, 3, 4 hours away. So the sport's not accessible to people. That's one big obstacle. Second is we don't have professional coaches in this country. We don't have hardly any coaches that are running a dojo full time where that's their main source of revenue or employment. They're all doing it after their jobs. They're doing it on the side. It's a hobby. It's not to make money. You know, it's not to put food on the table. It's just I'm doing it for fun. Right. So when you do things for fun, you don't invest the amount of time you would as you would if it was your full-time job, right?
Right.
When you go to work, you wake up, you go to work, you're working 8 to 6 or 9 to 5. 8 hours of your day is to help make money for whoever, some company. If you are working on judo 8, 10 hours a day, it could be successful. You'd have better instructor, you'd have better schools, you know, the quality of the product is better. And now when it's seen as your full-time job, you're gonna put all of your energy into that job. Right?
Right.
So right now it's just a hobby and it can't be successful. So my thought is, because we lack instructors, because we lack people who do it for a living, jiu-jitsu is one sport where it is accessible now. There are dojos everywhere. Yeah. Almost every town has a jiu-jitsu school, right? Yeah. And what else they also have? They also have instructors. They have trained instructors who are black belts in jiu-jitsu, but don't forget where jiu-jitsu came from.
Judo.
And most of those instructors have experience in judo from Brazil, or their instructor had experience that they have limited knowledge of judo that's been passed down to them. But the one thing that all of them do really well is they all do niwaza and grappling on the ground very well, right? We know they've got that dialed in. But when you go to a jiu-jitsu tournament, 95 to 99% of the people don't do takedowns, don't want to go anywhere near takedowns, have no idea what takedowns is, and therefore they're missing something. So how do you differentiate your school from the school down the street? The takedown game is really the differentiator, right?
Absolutely.
Between jiu-jitsu schools.
Yep.
So my thought is, if we were going to try to expand judo, let's just, and jiu-jitsu is also all about lineage. Who did you learn from? Who was your master instructor, right?
Right.
Henzo Gracie, black belt. I'm a black belt under this guy or that guy. Whoever it is, they always tell you who their instructor is. So you've got an audience that's professional. You've got an audience that already has a school and has mats. You have something that they need, which is the takedown game, which would help make their students better. Could be a separate class that they could drive revenue, additional revenue, or charge their existing students more money to take. We're going to start teaching judo classes at jiu-jitsu schools. So as an additional revenue source, and certify those instructors in judo. Jimmy Pedro's judo system, American judo system taught by Jimmy Pedro, whatever it is, I could be the master instructor that teaches them how to instruct and how to do takedowns properly so that they can add judo to their schools and their curriculum, become certified instructors and black belts under this system, and differentiate their school from the others in the area, number one. Number two, I think judo is a much more fun sport for children. And it's much easier to teach to children than jiu-jitsu is. When you see a lot of jiu-jitsu schools, most of the focus is on the 18 to 65-year-old. You don't see a lot of, like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old kids doing jiu-jitsu because, number one, the instructors don't have the patience to teach the movements to those kids. That's one obstacle. The second obstacle is kids don't have that good a control of their legs and their bodies at that age. When they're laying on the ground and to control each other, they're just not that coordinated. And number three, it's not that fun and interactive for them. Mm. You know, they don't want to be choked. They don't want to be armbarred. They don't like that at that age. So, but judo, which is much more dynamic and fun and exciting and athletic for little kids, it's more an active sport. That's where I think it could also succeed. So now you can teach judo for kids and judo for your jiu-jitsu guys so they can become better. And I think that's the only way judo could instantly or quickly become a popular sport in this country, is to partner with jiu-jitsu in this way.
And I think that's a phenomenal idea. You know, I think us as grapplers, you know, wrestlers, jiu-jitsu, judo, well, we develop character in a lot of the similar ways, and there's so many parallels you can draw between all those different arts. Mm-hmm. And you're right, at the tournaments, there's so many people that want to pull guard because they're not comfortable on their feet. You know, I'm a mostly a wrestler. That's my foundation.
Sure.
You know, I feel very confident because all tournaments start on your feet, where I can tell when my opponent's not comfortable or confident on his feet, and I just take full advantage of that.
Sure.
You know, a judoka, probably the same thing, you know.
Right.
So I definitely support and believe that that would help you know, competition for jiu-jitsu guys.
I mean, the other thing that judo, you know, the other challenge with judo for adults is that people don't like to fall, right? It's dangerous, it's scary, you know, it's hard. And there's a chance of being potentially injured, right? Because you're talking about people who are sitting in front of a desk 8 hours, 10 hours a day, who haven't done a tumble salt or haven't left their feet since they were in elementary school, right?
Right.
So it's scary to go into judo class. But my comment there would be, make judo safe for adults. There's no reason why you have to do sparring or randori or free practice. You know, you've been at our dojo so many times that... Yep. You can get an unbelievably great workout without ever throwing anybody. Just doing the movements, doing the uchikomis, doing the repetitions, you know, learning how to throw, learning how to take somebody, everything in a controlled way, then judo, the safety factor is thrown out the window. It is, right. Becomes a very safe, fun sport to learn. And it's through those years and years of drills at a high level where you actually develop your throwing technique. Now you're physically ready to be able to take falls too, because your body's in shape to do it.
Right. And recently I went to Sensei Israel's gym, and he had us practicing where our opponent was on their knees. Mm-hmm. So they're getting used to, one person's getting used to throwing without the full throw,
right.
You know, and the other person's getting used to that fall. And it was I thought it was a great way to safely introduce, you know, that element of the sport.
Right.
So, okay, with that, what is Project 2024, the idea, the purpose, the objective behind it?
Sure. So when we started Project 2024, it was right after the 2016 Olympic Games. And it hadn't been decided where the 2024 Olympics was going to be held yet. So the International Olympic Committee had it narrowed down to two places. It was either going to be in Paris, France, or it was going to be in Los Angeles, United States. So it hadn't been decided which country was going to get the Olympics. If the United States had been chosen to host the 2024 Games, that would have meant that Team USA would have a full lineup of athletes competing in those games. So we'd have one representative in every single weight class. So we'd have 14 athletes competing in the Olympics. I did not want our country to have a full Olympic team and not have a chance to win a medal. So I decided that with Travis Stevens and Chris Skelly and some others, we decided we're going to put together a project focused on developing, identifying the talent, inspiring, and training that group of athletes to be ready for the 2024 Olympics. Okay, it's a youth group. You're talking about identifying kids between the ages of like 14 and 20, who in 8 years are going to be 22 to 28 and will be ready for the 2024 Olympics. That was our timeline. It just so happened that Paris, France became the host country for the 2024 Games, so it'll be held in Paris. But 2028 is going to go to L.A., and so it's Project 2024. We got 4 more years to develop our team.
Awesome.
And it'll be LA 2028. But it's the concept is this. The one area of weakness we have, well, there's a lot of areas of weakness, but one area of weakness where we see over and over again where the sport of judo is failing its athletes is identifying talent at a young age, developing that talent, and keeping that talent in the sport. We lose tons of kids to wrestling, tons of kids to other sports, because judo doesn't do enough for this age group.
Mm.
It's an age where all the dojos in America will tell you, with tons of kids, no teens, and lots of adults. The adults come back to judo when they're set in their lives and they did it as little kids. They left for a long time. Now they're working. Oh man, I miss judo. They go back to judo. But it's between like 14 and like 24 when the kids are off to high school and college, where judo is an odd sport. It's not in school systems. It's not recognized as a high school sport. You know, so they can't be a somebody at their local high school if they do judo. They go, you do judo, like give me a karate chop, or they don't even, so they're being made fun of. So that's right, it's a right. Time when it's an awkward time for teenagers. So if we don't have a sense of community, we don't have a sense of belonging for these kids where they're part of something bigger than just themselves, then we're going to lose them. So Project 2024 is about going to all of the local areas, bringing Olympic athletes. So every instructor that teaches a Project 2024 clinic is an Olympian. So we're bringing Olympians to local markets. We're bringing large groups of kids together in these regions, hundreds of kids, where they actually can learn from an Olympian. So they're being inspired, they're being trained, they're being showed skills and drills to help make them better. But the most important thing is we are inspiring them to stay in the sport. Mm. We're motivating them to train harder. We're giving them purpose and a sense of belonging to something bigger than just their dojo and just themselves. And then what we're doing with the local regions, we're working with those local organizing club coaches to help identify 5 or 10 of the most talented kids from each region. And we're inviting them to come to bigger camps where they can now come together as bigger groups. Again, being with kids their age, doing similar things with like-minded goals, whether we want to go to the Olympics. So now we bring 45 kids to, you know, the tournament in Quebec, or we're bringing a group of kids to 25 kids to Europe. We're bringing large groups of kids together from all parts of the country to train with one another. They're making each other better. They're staying in the sport. They're creating friendships and memories. So the hope is that, you know, with this large talent pool, we can then at the end have, you know, 5 to 10 that'll have a chance to medal in the Olympics. Hmm. But it's a long-term project.
So you guys become like ministers of judo.
Right. 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 Fundraisers, sponsorship development, mentors, coaches, parents, you know, babysitters, you know, but and we're teaching them the whole approach. It's not just the judo. We're teaching them the mental side of the game, how to prepare mentally for competition, how to set goals, realistic goals for ourselves, and you know, work towards those goals. We're helping them with their diet and nutrition, giving them some guidelines on what you're supposed to eat, what a professional athlete is all about, going to bed early, you know, taking a nap in between practices so you get your rest, your body heals while it rests, right? That you need to do strength and conditioning outside of judo. You've got to be doing some real professional strength and conditioning. Mm-hmm. It's not just judo technique and training. It's the whole package, the diet, nutrition, strength and conditioning, judo technique, skills and drills, plus the randori. With the proper coaching, with the proper, you know, mindset and goal-oriented approach to developing as an athlete.
And I believe that through more exposure to judo, like I wasn't exposed to judo till 35. Mm-hmm. And I know if I was exposed much earlier, I would have loved it, you know? So, right. I mean, I think there's a pool of wrestlers that would probably be interested, a pool of jiu-jitsu guys that would probably be interested. They just never had that exposure. You know, they might find a passion in it, a love for it, you know, have fun with it.
I think the one thing for all those wrestlers and all those jiu-jitsu guys that's needed is there has to be a way where it's not a constant struggle to fund yourself.
Right.
Right? So the one, it has to be more to judo. That's why I say it, if it was more professional events and we could actually give prize money, if there was actually like sponsorships to be won, if there was actually like a way you could qualify for a team and be fully funded once you qualified for that team, that's the professionalism I'm talking about that can take this sport to a whole nother level. Because right now, any of those wrestlers, any of those jiu-jitsu guys that come to judo, there's no money for them.
Right.
There's no way for them. Even if they make the national team, they still have to fund their way places. It's not until they're at the highest level of the sport where they actually can be funded. But when do you need the funding? As you're developing.
Right.
So you need to get your funding level lower and lower and lower down to the cadet and the junior level so that now people want to stay in the sport and parents don't have to come out of pocket so much for everything.
Which gets it a little bit into my next question as far as what are the most important things you've learned in sports evolution, just as a whole, that we as a community should know to evolve judo?
What have I learned from judo?
Yeah, well, the sports evolution, like how sports in general have evolved and how judo can learn from that and evolve as well.
Well, I think the International Judo Federation has done a lot of things recently to modify the rules to make it, you know, more understandable from the public. That's one thing that they've done. Like the evolution of the rules has really evolved on the IJF side. They've also made the sport very accessible to the fans of the sport. Every single judo event worldwide is always live streamed. Mm. It's all live. You can watch any match, any mat, any player, any time in any competition that's on the world circuit. So they've made it accessible to the coaches and the people that have any remote interest in the sport can now watch that sport. The only problem is domestically, nobody can watch any of the domestic fighters because it's not on the world tour. But anything on the world tour is. So that's one thing that's been really good. It's kept up with the times. judo social media is really strong and good. Judo's accessibility to content is very, very good. Any athlete I want to scout right now online, I can go online, punch in their name, pull up their last 50 fights, and I can watch all of them right now. Right. You know, so they've made the sport very organized, accessible to the coaches and the players. I think, you know, one thing where judo has sort of missed the boat, at least especially in America, is that it's become too much of a sport. You know, jiu-jitsu is a lifestyle. You know, there's a lot of people that, and surfing's a culture. You know, jiu-jitsu is a lifestyle.
Right.
Motorcycle riding is a lifestyle, right? It's, so what I see is jiu-jitsu has become a place where people spend money, right? They don't go to the bars anymore and hang out with friends and have beers or whatever. They actually go to jiu-jitsu, and that's their sense of community and belonging. And it's a very social thing. They roll together. They eat together. They go to competitions together. They go to events together. They watch competitions. Like, they're interested in this sport, and it's become a lifestyle. And that's why it's so successful. Judo is just a sport. It isn't a lifestyle in this country. Everybody's geared towards competing and training hard to get better. It's not just about having the fun and being part of a club. And I think that's one thing that it's kind of not done well. And it's also a sport that's been given away for far too many generations. So what happens is when you give your sport away, number one, people don't value that sport. They're going to be less likely to see any true value in it. If they're not paying for it, then it's easy to quit. Well, this thing can't be that good. It's only 15 bucks. It's only 25 bucks a month. You know what I mean? Jiu-jitsu charges 200, 250 a
month. Right.
Right? They value the sport. Now you're also attracting a different clientele. You're attracting a clientele that's making a conscious decision to say, hey, I'm making a commitment. I want to learn this stuff because it's cool. And they're putting skin in the game so that if they don't come to practice, they're losing money. So number one, they're definitely going to show up and train because they've made a decision. This is what I want to do with my life. Therefore, they're more likely to stick with it. You also have now a group of people that can afford to pay that kind of tuition, which means that they can afford then to also compete in events and pay the $100 entry fee or get on a plane or get on, you know, take a car ride and spend money on a hotel to go compete. Your clientele has money and they're going to spend money on that sport and buy products in and around that sport. What judo has done, it's given its product away, hasn't charged anything for its tuition. Therefore, you're attracting a clientele that doesn't have money. So what happens when that kid needs to go to a tournament? Parents don't have the money to put the kid in a tournament, right?
Right.
So now the local dojo coach has to raise money just so his kids can compete. Now, if the kid wants to go away to travel, what happens? Can't travel. Got to go raise money to bring the kid to tournaments. So you're that's not creating a business. That's creating an obstacle to stay in the sport. Right, so it's really the type of clientele we go after by price, the way we price our sport, the way people value our sport, and it's all a domino effect to be a non-business hobby.
Wow, that's powerful. It's real. So having said that, what about on the sports management side? Because you own your own gym, and what have you learned doing that that you could share with the community so that they could grow judo at their own gym?
Again, it goes down to professionalism and doing judo full-time. I have a full-time program director at my school who runs my school. He's in charge of answering every phone call, every email, talking to every potential customer, meeting those customers, doing introductory lessons, properly introducing them to the sport of judo, showing them the different programs we have to offer. We offer kids programs from 2 to 4 years old toddlers all the way up to your adult recreational player. And every class we have, every program we have is age and level specific. So we have beginner classes, intermediate classes, advanced classes, both for kids and adults. I don't have a one size fits all program. When you run, most dojos have a kids class and an adult class. Kids class could be a 6 year old kid who's a white belt all the way up to a 13, 14 year old purple belt who's been there 10 years. They're all in the same class. When you have that type of class structure, you don't become a specialist. One kid feels awkward. It's either the 6-year-old who feels like this is way over my level, or it's the purple belt who gets bored because he's got to dumb down the class for the white belts.
Right.
You've got to become specialized judo instructors with a professional staff that does this for a living. We have 7 paid staff members at my dojo. You know, and their jobs are to help teach judo and make the students better, and they love doing it, and they all have to be properly trained on how to run a class. But I would say professionalizing and running dojos, the thing that most instructors have to realize is that the product that you deliver is important, but it isn't necessarily the quality of the judo product you deliver. Because at the end of the day, 95% of the students that walk through the door, they're not coming to learn an Uchimata or a Taiotoshi or a Sankaku or any judo technique. They're there to have their lives changed. They're there to become, as kids, more confident, you know, more disciplined, more focused, or more fit. My kid's getting picked on in school. I want him to do judo. My kid's out of shape and he's lazy. He does nothing but play video games. His diet is awful. I want him doing something physical. He's doing judo. My kid doesn't listen at home. He doesn't listen in school. I need to put him in a disciplined environment where he learns how to become disciplined. That's why he's doing judo. So you have to deliver in your classes that type of environment that makes that kid more confident, more disciplined, more focused, or more athletic. That's the product you need to deliver. Mm. It's only through judo training. Judo is the mechanism by which we teach those skills. Right. And once you get that, then you can have a full dojo of students. Every judo instructor tends to go, oh, I can't wait to teach you how to do this throw and how to get you into randori. We don't need to get the kid to randori. We need to get the kid how to bow properly, how to show respect, how to exercise, how to use his mind to achieve goals, how to be more confident and stand up tall and grab the gi with authority and learn how to attack with power. Like, there's so many things we know as black belts you get from judo, but we got to bring it right down from the very first lesson. Teach them this is what judo has to offer you.
And that's incredible, because I've been in that room. I practiced early to witness that character and leadership development program that you guys teach. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, you know, bring up like things like gratitude, and then you have all the kids like defining what gratitude is and how that's important in life. And then Sensei Riley gives them an instruction to, okay, everybody, I want you to go find your parent and tell them what you're grateful for. Whisper it in their ear. And like they all run and they're whispering to their parent what they're grateful for in their ear, and just lights up their parents and like gives the kid joy. And it's like, it's really, you know, about that character development. I mean, it's incredible. You know, those kids love it. They enjoy mm-hmm. it. You know, they become better people through it.
Right. So that's my mantra at the school. We're creating champions on and off the mat. We're creating better human beings, better people. When you do that as a judo club, then judo can become popular, because nobody knows what judo is, but they know that it's changing their kids' lives, and they're right. going to go tell other people,
right,
you got to have your kid do this because it's amazing and it's awesome.
Yeah, that's incredible. As far as sports psychology, you know, what's the most important things you've learned about that, and how can we as a community empower our athletes in judo?
Sports psychology, I think that almost everybody focuses on the physical part of sports, right? Everybody weightlifts, or everybody runs or goes to the gym, and everybody trains in their respective sport, right? That's a given. If you're an athlete, you train. Everybody knows that. The physical training. I don't think there's a lot of sports or a lot of coaches that help train the minds of their students or spend any time whatsoever training the minds of their students. I think some do talk about, hey, our goal as a team is this, our goal for you as an athlete is that, in terms of having goals. But I don't think they actually teach their students how to utilize their mind to, number one, see success. Like, visualize where you want to be and how it's going to feel when you get there. You know, it's one thing to write a goal down on a piece of paper or say you have a goal, right? So step one is, my goal is this. Step two is putting that goal in writing. Write it down on a piece of paper and commit to that goal. This is your goal. This is your purpose, period. Number three, visualize that goal. Like, picture it happening in your mind time and time again. And not just saying, oh, there I am on the top of the podium. No, no. Feel the entire day of what that competition is like. Like, watch yourself succeed and win the match. Watch yourself walk off the mat and high-five your coach. Go back and warm up again. Get back out on the mat and actually put names and countries and who you're beating and make it as real as possible. Step up on that podium. Watch the guy put the medal on your neck. Watch the flag go up behind you. Listen to the national anthem. Feel the chills go through your body. Get the picture taken afterwards. Bring the bronze and the silver medalist up onto the podium with you. Take the picture. Experience it as if it's real, as if it's really happening. And I get goosebumps. Every time I talk about this, I get goosebumps throughout my entire body because I'm reliving it. For me, it's real. It's happened and I'm reliving it. And when it becomes real and you can first you say it, you commit to it, you visualize it, now you got to believe it's possible. You always have to do the physical. You always have to do the work. But the ones that visualize it, a lot of times, what I believe happens is that your brain creates paths, right? It's creating these pathways, these connections that are saying, I'm going to go to the top. I'm going to be the champion. I'm going to go to the top. I'm going to be a champion, over and over and over again. So that when the day of competition comes, now we're at the World Championships. My goal was to be world champion. When my body gets there, it's been here before, right? It's not new. It's not foreign. It's not just this thing I hoped to happen. I've seen it happen hundreds of times. So when the day starts, I believe it's possible. And when my body gets there, I believe that the pathway opens up and allows you to go through. And that's how you succeed. But if you've never thought about it in your brain and you've never been there before, you've never experienced it, then it doesn't seem real. And you hit that block and something stops us from letting it happen. And the reason why I really strongly believe in this is because once an athlete becomes a champion or makes the medal stand for the first time in a major event, what happens afterwards? He continues to have success. He's got the confidence. He's been there before. He believes it. He's done it. He does it again. Does it again. His technique hasn't changed from 1 week ago till the day he stepped on the podium. The technique didn't change that much. But his mind, his belief in himself or herself, right? The confidence, the experience, they've already lived it. They know what it feels like. They want that feeling again. We've got to trick ourselves to think that it's happened already by using our mind to visualize and see it as real before it ever happens. Mm. So that's what we can do. We can teach our young athletes that, you know, the goal has to be, and the vision has to be realistic, right? It should be something you've never done before. But it can't be so far-fetched that just because you visualize it doesn't mean it's going to happen. It's got to be a goal that's realistic. So if you've never been on the national podium, maybe your goal is to be on the national podium this year. Once you get on the national podium, the next year might be to be the national champion. After national champion, I want to step up on the international podium. Then it's got to be gradual steps so that they're believable, achievable goals, and then we can use our mind to help get there and drive that direction. Mm.
And I've heard you tell a story that you had a dream the night before a world championship that you won. And it was so vivid that you woke up sweating and just believing that you had won. And then the next day you went and won the world championship.
True story. Birmingham, England. I've told the story. You just repeated it. But that's why I believe the power of the mind is that strong. Because never before, I had taken a bronze in the World Championships in 95, in 91. The night before the 99 World Championships, I went to bed early. I fell asleep at like 9:30 at night. In that dream, I won the World Championships. I woke up so excited. I jumped out of bed. I just stood up and jumped up. I looked around the room, looked at the clock, it's 2 something. You know, where am I moment? Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh my God, I haven't even fought yet. I was so depressed because I really had thought I had won. That's how real that dream was.
Yeah.
And I forced myself to go back to bed after like an hour and calm myself down. I slept for another 3 hours. I got up that day, and then that next day was the day that I won my world championship, 1999 world champion. And that's why I believe the mind, the visualization, I saw it before it happened, and then it happened the very next day. To me, that's not a mistake.
Right.
No, so that's powerful.
Definitely. How would you say, how do you overcome fear? Because I think that holds a lot of people back from believing in themselves.
We can't be afraid of anything. That's what I teach my students, and that's what I believe in. Fear is made up. What are we afraid of? What is it actually that you're afraid of? Right? That's what I pretty much say. It's all made up. Anxiety and fear is all made up in our own minds about the what might the outcome be. We can't worry about negative things. We can't worry about what might happen. We only focus on what's going to happen, and we're going to try to will it to happen. And we're going to go down fighting. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter. There's not anybody that hasn't failed. So it's the fear of failure that most people are afraid of. Right?
Right.
But how about focusing on the positivity of succeeding, of reaching our goals, of striving for them, of fighting, of battling, of being warriors? Because at the end of the day, whether you succeed or not, if you are a warrior and you fought your ass off and you trained your ass off, right, and you gave 100% of yourself, are people going to think you're a failure?
Absolutely not.
No, they're going to admire you.
Yeah.
Look at Travis, right? Travis Stevens in the 2012 Olympic Games lost the semifinal to Ole Bischoff and Golden Score, right? Lost the split decision to the Olympic champion. He had a war, the most memorable fight in Olympic history, with tape in his head and bleeding everywhere. And man, he trained his ass off. He fought his ass off. Everybody admired him from that moment on forever because of the way he approached it. He wasn't afraid. He fought valiantly. He went down swinging, right? So all we can control is how we do things. So if we approach every competition or every test or whatever it is in life, everything we want to go after, with 100% of ourselves, our hearts, our minds, our work ethic, our passion, our warrior spirit, if we go after everything positively and we don't worry about the outcome, we believe it's going to happen, we will it to happen, we fight it, and if it doesn't, what have we lost? We know we gave 100%.
Right.
If we fought afraid, if we went into that battle like gun shy and scared and timid and backed down, do we have a chance to win it anyway? No, we don't. Because we're not giving 100% of ourselves. We're afraid. What the hell are we afraid of? Can't be afraid of ourselves. So I try to get, and when I talk to our athletes before they fight any tournament, while we're in the chute, while I'm talking to them, I'm getting in their head, telling them, you're a warrior, you're a champion, you're going to kick your ass. Nobody's beating us. You're going to rip this guy's head off. Let's go. Nobody's stopping us today. Nobody. Olympic champion. Kayla Harrison, Olympic champion. Travis Stevens, you're getting back 2012. Let's go. One guy in your way. Is he better than you? Is he better than you? Did he train harder than you? Does he want it more than you? Let's go get him. Like, let's go, coach. Like, they'll go fight. You know? And that, to me, that passion and that positive. I didn't say, hey, man, this guy's Olympic champion. You got to be careful. You got to be timid. You know, no way, man. We're going right at him. This is the moment you've been waiting for your whole life. You've been waiting for this. Man, you start putting it on this guy, he's going to feel it. He's going to start having doubts. I want you to put the doubts in his head. You stay on him, you stay on him, you stay on him until you beat him. And then while the match is going on, yeah, but you're doing it. Keep coming. He's fading. Let's go. You give him that energy. Mm-hmm. And they keep feeding off of it. And that, to me, is the success to beating champions.
Mm. Sensei, you're giving me goosebumps. What's the most powerful way to deal with pressure that you found? Is it that just fearlessness and that focusing on the will and the outcome?
I think the ability to relax. The key, you know, pressure is usually self-imposed. Like, you put it on yourself, right? Most of the time you put it on yourself. I feel that the athletes have a very relaxed and balanced approach to sport. It's not life or death. You're still your mom, your dad, your significant other, your kids. They're still going to love you at the end of whatever happens, right? Yes, you want to win, but it's not the end of, it's not the end of the world if you don't.
Right.
Relax. Have fun. You know, and I felt that anxiety kills. So the biggest obstacle to peak performance is anxiety. It's your heart gets beating fast.
Yeah.
You start to hyperventilate. You get tired. You have an adrenaline dump, right? You see this in fighters all the time. First round is really tough. They left it all out. Now they can't fight for the next four rounds and nothing.
Right.
It didn't go their way. They have to stay, no matter what happens during a match or an event, you've got to stay composed. You've got to stay relaxed because you can only think straight if you're relaxed, right? You can't send your body into that fight or flight mode because when you're in that fight mode, you can't think clearly. So I used to have them all just long, deep breaths, you know, in through the nose, out through the mouth, black out everything. No images in your head. Let's get your heart rate down. Let's breathe. Let's calm down. We're about to step on the mat. All the training is done. We're ready to go. Now is your time. And you've got to go out there relaxed and composed. And that, to me, helps with the anxiety. So I get them really, really pumped up and ready to go. Mentally, we're ready. Then I shut it all down. Mm-hmm. We breathe. We're calm. Now we go fight.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned the mind. What about the heart? Is that something different than the mind?
Yeah, because to me, the heart is passion, right? The heart is passion. The heart is, if you're talking about like actually when you go out on the mat and fight with heart,
yeah.
You know, the mind visualizes success. It gives you the visual. You have to have the intelligence to adjust and listen and make adjustments in the matches and make smart decisions. But the heart is something that a lot gives you that warrior spirit, that kind of the never quit attitude. That's not the mind. That's the heart that's beating that, you know. And when I look for talented athletes, I look for athletes that have heart. I don't look for technique. I don't care what their technique looks like. I want a guy who has a big heart that's going to go walk through a wall and knock down a building to be a champion. Mm. You know, that's going to go to work every day with his, you know, his pitchfork. Mm. And he's going to come every day with the pitchfork and he's going to grind and he's going to dig and he's going to dig some more and he's going to grind and he's going to dig some more. He's a laborer. And when he goes out to fight, I know I've got a really hard piece of iron that's going to go out there and fight like an animal. Right? And that's the heart of the champion. Mm. And then the mind of the champion is, you know, picturing success, you know, steering the direction of the ship. And so they have to have both. Never quit attitude, laborer, and, you know, be able to, what the one common denominator that I saw in all the successful athletes that I've worked with and dealt with, and that's, you know, Ronda Rousey, when she was out here training, had this thing about her. Kayla Harrison has this thing about her. Travis Stevens has this about him. I had it when I was an athlete. Now we've got a young girl, Skylar, at our dojo who has this same kind of mentality. Mm. It's they hate losing far more than they like winning.
Wow.
Losing bothers them so much that they would rather not ever let it happen. So it actually affects their rest of their day, the rest of their week. When they lose, they lock themselves in rooms. They don't want to come out. They don't want to socialize. They're pissed. Their goals weren't met. It bothers them so much that they remember that feeling. So when they step out on the mat, they fight not to win because they don't want to feel like that ever again.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they get excited when they do win because I don't have to feel like that.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But it's not, it's they hate losing more than they like winning. Therefore, they're going to win.
Wow.
So it's that, to me, that's what I see. And that to me is the, you know, when you're looking at identifying talent, I want that type of attitude.
Right.
Combined with The pitchfork.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the key. That's how you identify, to me, that's how you identify a superstar, a future superstar. Not by how coordinated, athletic, physical they look. It's, you know, listen, when Rhonda first came and when Travis first came and even Kayla, they weren't physical specimens. They were young kids, right? 15, 16, 18, whatever they were when they came. But when they left, they were physical specimens, mentally and physically. Hmm.
What makes a champion in life?
Somebody that lives life with passion. Somebody that cares about other people. Somebody that's selfless. And somebody that helps others more than they help themselves. That's how I've built, it's really how I've built all my businesses. I've always taken a shot on people that I believed in, and I've always tried to help them achieve their dream and their goal. So if it's a new guy opening up a dojo, hey, can you help me out on the price? Can you help, you know, can you make this happen? Or hey, can you sponsor my kid? Or can you help me with, you know, can you help me with a payment program? Or, you know, this tournament locally, I'll buy from you if you can help donate to my tournament. Like, I've always helped people get started so that they can make martial arts their full-time business. Mm. And in doing so, I've created some really good friendships and lasting partnerships with these people that they're very loyal. So on the business side, I've helped people do that. On the judo side, same thing. I've helped people make careers out of this sport, giving them access to a great dojo full-time, give them access to professional coaching, utilizing all my resources to help them get to their goals, whether it's finding money for them to get to events or finding sponsors to help fund, you know, their living and training and, you know, their day-to-day lives. You know, so I've tried to help other people in that way. Obviously, family is important. Anybody who's going to be a champion in life is somebody who has a good, strong family and cares about their family, and their family cares about them. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today without, you know, my wife and the family I have around me, my dad, my mom. Right. And, you know, I have a really good, strong family, brothers and sisters that all root for me and help me and support me. Without that, and that also gives you balance. Like I said before, the successful athlete is a balanced athlete. That's somebody who doesn't put all of their eggs in one basket, meaning if I don't succeed today at this competition, I'm a failure. Somebody who has a family behind them they can go home to that's going to have, you know, be there for them, win or lose. Mm-hmm. Somebody that's also making progress in other areas of their life. Maybe they're still in college and they're going to school, so that when school's not going well, they can focus on judo and feel good about judo. Right. When judo's not going well, they can put some energy into studying and getting a good grade on a test, so they can feel that balance of feeling good and bad is in different buckets. But if it's only in the judo bucket and you fail and you lose, then you feel like, oh, man, I sacrificed everything for that and I lost.
Right.
I feel bad. So, you know, it's surrounding. I never put my life on hold. You know, when I got married when I was 23 years old. I had my first kid when I was 25 years old. I won my first medal when I was 26 years old.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like I never put my life on hold for sport. And I took my family along for the ride.
Wow.
They were part of everything. And it actually helped me help motivate me when I did go away from my family. You know, when I was away from my three kids and I was training in Japan, I made the most of that training in Japan because they were suffering at home without me.
Right.
So I wouldn't skip practice. I wouldn't skip a lift. I wouldn't, because every day I'm not doing something positive is a day that I could have spent with them.
Right.
So I use that as motivation to keep training hard, to put 100% in all the time, and to help reach the top for them because they were making the sacrifice for me.
Hmm. That's powerful. And when I first came up here to train with you guys, one of your students told me, they're like, one of the things about Sensei Jimmy, he's a great athlete, he's a great coach, and he's a great freaking person. That's what makes him so awesome. And,
thank you.
And I can attest to that, you know, after knowing you now. What life advice would you have for anybody listening to wrap up your message and anything you said today?
Pursue your dreams with passion for as long as you can while it still makes sense. And while you're doing it, give 100% of yourself. I have zero regrets in my life in terms of, you know, my athletic career. And what I found is that even though I never became Olympic champion, right, my goal realistically was to be an Olympic gold medalist. That was my goal. I never achieved that goal. I don't see myself as a failure. I don't think anybody else sees me as a failure either. But the pursuit of those goals, all of the lessons that I learned along the way, the perseverance, the work ethic, you know, the humility, the relationships I developed, I didn't succeed by myself. I had so many people helping me. I had guys in Japan that let me stay in their houses, that fed me. Same with Germany, same with England, you know, all over the world, there were people that were parts of my journey. And without any of them, none of it would have been possible. So, you know, by those life experiences, by the lessons I learned, by the relationships I created, I now utilize that whole experience to give back to others and to help them do similar in their lives. But for my life advice is pick something that you're very passionate about, that you really want to achieve or to accomplish in your life. Whether it ever comes true or not isn't the important part. The important part is that you committed to something, you followed through, you gave 100% of yourself, you learned along the way, you continue to adjust and learn, and that's the judo way, is finding the better way to the top or the path to success. And be a good person while you do it. Help a lot of other people, because it'll come back and to pay you back. My most rewarding days are when students come to me and say, "Sensei, I did this." It had nothing to do with winning a medal or winning a tournament. It was about this kid just got an award at school because he stuck up for somebody else, you know, or he got commended by a teacher because he did something that was so different than what everybody else would have done. Or it was, you know, they got accepted to a college of their dreams that they never thought was possible, but it was through the work ethic they learned at the dojo that helped get them through. They remembered their judo experience, this reason why they succeeded. You know, kids that overcame, you know, whether it's bullies or, you know, hearing stories. Like, that's what I live for. It's not about the medals. It's about all the struggles that all of our students face on a daily basis, and how judo was the mechanism that helped them solve all those problems. That's where I feel proud and fulfilled.
Mm. And it shows.
Yeah.
It shows.
That's cool.
And we appreciate you for it.
Thank you.
Last question.
Sure.
If you could take the form of any animal in the world, what animal would you be?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. My God. Oh, any animal in the world. Wow. Sheesh. I don't know. I think, you know, my first response was going to be a dog. And the reason why I said a dog is because dogs are very, very loyal people, you know, loyal animals to their owners, and they're pretty hardworking, and, you know, to me, a dog is fun and playful and cares about others. And when other people are sad, they go lick them, and they sense that. They have a good sense for their owners and stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
To me, I think like a dog to me would fit like my personality. And then I was also thinking about a lioness, you know, cause it's not the lion. The lion hunts, but the lioness takes care of its prey. It takes care of its children. Right. And really cares and protects.
Wow.
And when someone comes and attacks the pride, it's the lioness that goes and, you know, takes
handles
them down.
The business.
And, right. You know, so I'd say it's one of those two is what I think. That best embody who I am and what I'd want to be.
That's awesome. So you'd be some kind of dog lioness hybrid.
How about a male lioness? But I, when I picture the lion, all he does is sleep all day, right? Lays there.
Sure.
That's not me. I couldn't picture myself being a lion sitting there all
That's
day.
That's hilarious.
I'm a doer.
All right, Sensei. So you run Fuji Mats and Fuji Sports. How can people get in contact with you for those services?
Awesome. We, FujiMats.com, we outfit the best dojos and martial arts facilities in the world. I have the most experienced team of designers and professionals as part of my Fuji Mats team. And we help make dreams become reality at Fuji Mats. Fujisports.com, where we outfit the best teams in the world with all of their gis, rash guards, shorts, and gear they need to compete in. Compete and train. That's what Fuji is. We help, and we've helped sponsor a lot of, athletes in world-class athletes in judo, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, take them from the very base of their training when they were only like 16, 17 years old. Those athletes have become the superstars in those sports, and now they're true ambassadors who live the Fuji mindset.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate everything you do, Sensei.
Thank you.
And for anybody who wants to follow us at Grappling Real, we're on Instagram, Facebook. Share this episode. It's the most powerful way to get the message out and to expand the campaign for judo in America. So with that, thank you, Sensei. Chris.
My pleasure. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
And everybody at home, we love you guys. See ya.